One of the most valuable learnings for me along this path, in this path of practice, has been learning to be present and mindful of my body, connected to my body. I saw through the mindfulness practice that the tendency is so strongly to get caught in that vortex of thought, to get pulled into those storylines that seem to have such a strong hold over us. And the energetic feel of that is going right up into the head, going right up into the actual physical head. And there can so easily be this loss of ground, a sense of a ground, sort of even like the earth, even the connection to the earth under our feet. And that tendency to be pulled up into the thinking gives this feeling of disconnection and even energetically kind of a lightheadedness, a dizziness sometimes, a real kind of sense of being almost lost. Like we don't know where we are. We're just pulled into this whole other reality. And so this encouragement, particularly the Western traditions, the way that we have taught the meditation here, has been to bring more and more emphasis on the body. And, you know, firstly, beginning with breath. Sometimes the breath had been taught to follow the sensations of the nostril, sensations at the nostrils, which is still a little bit too much in the around the head. You know, there's not enough distance between the attention at the nostrils and the attention with the thoughts. It was Sayadaw Upandita, one of the Burmese masters, who really encouraged people to really bring the attention with the breath more fully down into the belly, to bring it into the abdomen, so there was a bit more of a grounding, an anchoring of the body, of the attention through the body. And so over the years, there's been a lot. We primarily focused with breath, and then opening up to the feel of the body connecting to the earth through the walking practices, the invaluable practice of the slow walking, the slow movement of just feeling the feet on the earth, feeling the connection with the earth as we walk. So again, noticing that tendency of the pull through the thought and then the releasing, the disengaging, and reconnecting with the touch of the feet on the ground, the feel of the breath, the body. And this was so much my practice for so many years, of just this disentangling, letting go of the thought, letting go of the thinking, and really using the body as a way to anchor the attention more fully in the present moment. For us in this practice, there hasn't so far been so much emphasis on that. Sayadaw Utejaniya doesn't really emphasize that. He really wants to encourage people to continue just to pay attention, and see what knowledge is going to be revealed as you stay present in that more open, expanded way. And yet I feel that there is some limitation for us here in the West that might be okay in the East, where people may not have the intellect as developed. That seems to be generally the case. And so there is more encouragement to think. There's more encouragement to reflect. There's more encouragement to actually use the thinking mind. And so some of the teachings, particularly in this regard, can support that, this reflection and this wise consideration. I think, and it's also something that I've been seeing happening a little bit here, is because now there's so much encouragement on the reflection, and there's so much encouragement on the questioning and the investigating and opening that up, there can be then the tendency to lose connection with the body and lose connection with that more elemental, very direct experience of the sensations through the body, of the sights and the sounds and the smells and the sensations and the feel and the skin, and that and the grounding and the anchoring through the body. We really haven't been putting emphasis on the breathing, on the breath. And yet that is such an invaluable resource for us. So I wanted to just bring this out this morning, this piece around looking at how to bring these into balance, so that we can really draw on the intellect. We can draw on this very beautiful and developed intellect that we have. Everyone here in the room has educated and developed in that regard. So we can draw on that. We can use that as a way to support the deepening of our understanding, of our wisdom, of our knowledge. And yet how to bring that in and open that up without then getting more caught up in all of the thinking and the reflection. So that we're remembering to come back to the present moment through the body where the body is alive, the senses, the sights, the sounds, the smells, the tastes, the feel, the skin, all of this as well, because we can so easily cut off. And there's a habit as well, I think, for many of us, and I see this everywhere that I go in the teachings, how people can be cut off from the body, and also not only from the sensual realm of experience, but also the emotional realm of experience. It's like there's some way we're not as developed, I think, in some way emotionally, where we are able to allow the emotions to come and go and flow, and maybe not get so easily caught up in the stories. Most every emotion that we feel has some kind of storyline with it. Sometimes we feel the emotional impact a little stronger than we know about the story. We may not know why we're feeling what we're feeling. But sometimes we're more caught up in the story and we don't actually know what we're feeling. There's not so much awareness of the emotion. So we want to start bringing some attention to this, and really to continue to open the awareness to include the body. When we did the exercise the other day and I had you look at an external object, something that you found attractive, and then asked you to turn the attention back to your mind and your body, so that you could feel some way that way the mind could get pulled out to an object, and then coming back and including, expanding the awareness to include other aspects of your experience. This is actually quite similar, because just as we get pulled into the external objects of the senses, we also get pulled into our thoughts, into our thinking. And we lose connection with the other aspects of our experience. So in a similar way, what we're doing is when we notice we're getting pulled into the thought, we want to see if we can relax the awareness, open the awareness, and find out what else is happening. What else is going on? Because there's still all this variety of experience that isn't being noticed, because the attention has narrowed into the story, has narrowed into the thought, and then we lose connection with the rest of the experience of the body, of the senses, and the emotions, the emotional impact. So it is an intentional relaxation and opening of the awareness, kind of a spacious awareness to include more. I also do this through questioning. And if I notice that I'm thinking and there's a repetition of thinking, sometimes it'll happen when there's some tiredness or there's not so much sharpness in the mind, the attention just easily goes into thought and you're just cycling thought. And sometimes I notice this in the mornings when I'm not as sharp. And so it's like just like the dreams, just they kind of cycle around and thoughts and dreams. And so one of the things that I do is I just ask myself, what else is happening? What am I feeling? What's happening in the body? And my attention just starts to relax and refocus into my body. I'm feeling my breath. I feel my body sitting on the seat. And I can start to feel more of the emotional sense as well. You know, I might feel the tiredness or feel some anxiety or feel some restlessness in the nervous system. And really starting to come, really focus the attention more at that, the bodily, physical level. Because otherwise, without the noticing of that, I'm just going to stay, the force field is pulling me into the thought realm. And I think you probably have all noticed this, how it seems like 98% of those thoughts are just redundant. They're just repetitious. It's like, what am I even thinking about this stuff for? It just feels so irrelevant to anything that's useful or sensible or reasonable. It's just like, what am I even bringing my attention? Why is my attention even here? But it is just habitual. It is just this, it's just the force that pulls us into thought. And so we can begin to counter that by through with awareness and the wisdom that knows that this is probably not so helpful, is the actual redirecting of that attention down through the breath, the body, the arms, the legs, the hands, the feet, really starting to open up, relax and open up the awareness. Then I may start to hear the sounds. That's when we relax, we begin to hear the birds, or we feel the air, the coolness on our skin, or the heat, or the heat of the sun, whatever. Everything just starts to relax and open. So this can be intentional. It can be part of our practice. We don't have to just simply follow. It's not like the awareness, we just go wherever the attention takes us. You know, because that there's not enough wisdom in that. The awareness, the consciousness is just conscious. It just attends to whatever it notices. It's like the dog that just goes sniffing around. The dog just loves to sniff around. But our job is just to keep it on the leash. No, pull it back, because it'll just go everywhere. The mind will just go anywhere and everywhere. And we know that there's a lot of dark alleys. You know, we find ourselves walking down. What am I doing down this alley? You know, why am I going down that road? You know, why am I, you know, back there with that relationship again? You know, we can pull that leash. Bring our attention back. And when we actually give our attention something to attend to, rather than just coming back to space, but we come back to another object like the breath, or we come back to the sensation in our body, like the sense of our body sitting on the seat, it's a little easier to ground our attention than if we're just going into kind of open space. It might be too amorphous. It's not enough to hold on to for the attention to hold on to. It's like the old saying that if you give a dog a bone to chew on, it's happy. The mind seems to want something to chew on. It just seems to be the way it is. You know, the mind wants something to do. It wants something to be engaged with. It wants something. It wants to be occupied. It's like we would like to be occupied, even as human beings. We don't like to just be idle, you know, be bored and sit without any. We like to do something. So it's the same way with the mind. So we keep the mind busy. We give the mind something to do. But what we give it to do is something that is actually in the service of liberation, in the service of freedom, in the service of awakening, in the service of brightening the mind, in service of letting go of our attachments and the causes of our pain and suffering. So in this path, that's what we're giving the mind to do. It's not like we're trying to stop the mind or trying to... We're not trying to stop anything. We're not trying to make a particular kind of experience of stillness or calm or where there's nothing happening. I remember many days of, you know, thinking I was supposed to get to this place where nothing was happening. I mean, that, when I think about that now, I mean, that is just wrong view. It's not possible. There's always something happening. But that's what we're wanting to attend to, so that what's happening is really more and more in the service of this freedom, in service of the letting go. So giving the attention something to focus on, something to ground into, something even wholesome, something, you know, in the somatic experience work with trauma, there's a tendency for the mind to just keep going back into the pattern of trauma because that's where the force field is. And so in that work, which is so beautiful, Peter Levine's work, it's really this understanding that you can actually begin to, with training, move the mind away from the trauma, in this case to something that's more neutral or more pleasant. So actually giving the mind some object to attend to that it becomes interested in that is not traumatic. So in the same way, kind of shifting the attention, we can shift the attention to something that's more pleasant, something that is more less activating for us, less painful for us. This is part of the wisdom. It doesn't mean that we're escaping. It doesn't mean that we're suppressing. It doesn't mean that we're ignoring ourselves or experience, or we're disconnecting from ourselves. It just means that we're using our wisdom to understand what brings about the conditions for more happiness and more ease and more freedom. So the mind, our mind is actually very pliable. It's very flexible. Our mind is not something that is static, that is solid, that is fixed, even though it can sometimes feel like that. We can feel very caught in our patterning, in our personalities. But our mind is very fluid, very, very, very pliable. And that's one of the amazing things to begin when we pay attention to the mind. We see, what is it? What is the mind? The mind is just a flow of experience. It's a flow, and there's nothing static. There's nothing fixed in this universe, in this world. Certainly not ourselves, not our mind, not our body, not our emotions, not any aspect of who we are. We are a process of flow. And so when we start to bring our wisdom, we see we can actually begin to engage with our mind, we can engage with our body. We start to have some mastery, we start to have some control from a place of wisdom over these seemingly inaccessible processes. So this is what we're starting to get some sense of. We're not just victims to our experience, to the way things are. We can actually intervene, we can make change, we can make choice, we can bring about changes. And hopefully that's happening from a place of wisdom. So as we allow the flow of experience and the flow of this emotional awareness, emotional intelligence, it's helpful to understand a little bit about what actually happens for us. And Buddhist psychology explains all of this. I mean, Buddhist psychology is one of the most intelligent psychologies that there is about the way this whole mind-body system operates. And in the teachings, they point to this very basic bare attention, where what happens is there's consciousness, this capacity to know our experience, of the birthright of all human beings is to be conscious. So we have this consciousness that then comes into contact with an object of one of the senses, of the objects of sight, of sounds, of smells, of taste, of feel in the skin, the sensations internally, externally. And then the mental activity, the thoughts and the images. So consciousness knows one of those six experiences. This is life. This is the expression of life. Six experiences. And I've said to you before that the first time that I heard that, when my teacher Joseph Goldstein said there were only six experiences, my mind could not comprehend that. How could there only be six? There's only six experiences that I have to get my head around? No, the five senses and the thought, the different thought formations. So there's consciousness that arises with the six sense experiences. Upon that contact, what happens is that there is a feeling that arises. A feeling meaning it's pleasant or unpleasant. It's inherent in the experience upon the contact. It's going to be pleasant or it's going to be unpleasant. It's going to be neutral, somewhere in between. It's not so personal on one level. It's just nature, the way it is. There's a feeling tone that arises. And at the same time, as we develop some experience and knowledge and language, what arises is some perception. We can make sense out of what's arising. There's a girl, there's a tree, there's light, there's dark, there's heaviness, there's lightness, there's happiness, there's sadness. We begin to have some kind of simple perception around what it is that we're actually in contact with. This all happens instantaneously upon contact. If there's an awake consciousness, and there's a body, if there's eyes, then we'll see. If there's ears, we'll hear. If we can't see, there's going to be a different kind of visual image. So this consciousness will know that. There'll be some feeling, and there'll be some perception. This is what we mean by bare attention. This is before the interpretation arises. This is before the whole conceptual overlay comes into play. We call this bare attention. And as our mind becomes more still and our attention, the mindfulness and the concentration become a little bit stronger, we start to have more experience of this bare attention before the mind arises. And there's so much that can start to be seen and known and understood because the mind isn't cluttered with all of our stories of the past and the future and our hopes and our fears and our worries and our concerns. We're just here. We're just here in this very subtle and elemental realm of experience. And sometimes we can know that and be there for a little while. But a lot of times what we're actually attending to is this, the thinking and the story making and the whole of time, past, present, future, coming into play, and all of what we call the overlay on top of experience. And then experience starts to get a lot more complicated and a lot more complex. As soon as we bring in the past, and as soon as we have a future, and as soon as we have a whole commentary on the present, things are more complicated. It's not that there's anything wrong with that. And of course, that is the way we do experience. Our human experience is like that. We just want to begin to understand what's actually happening and see if we have some choices to make about that. Whether we actually need to get so caught up in the whole story, or whether we have some choice about that. This is part of the mastery. This is part of the mastery in the meditation, the meditative expertise, we might say, or the meditative awareness, the meditative disciplines start to bring in some mastery around our mind. So that the conditioned mind, or we sometimes call it the egoic mind, isn't the one that's leading us around. It's like the dog. It's not like the dog's leading us around. We're just holding the leash. No, we've got the leash. And who is that? That is awareness, and that's wisdom. It's awareness and wisdom is holding the leash. And if you don't like where that dog is going, pull it back. And if you are a dog owner or you've had a dog, you know that sometimes you have to get pretty firm. Maybe even sometimes the dog goes, yelps. Ah, you're pulling too tight, you know, but you still have to yank it. Get over here. You know, but you're the one that's in charge. You know? Or it's the same with being a parent, isn't it? You know, a parent or... You know, but hopefully it's coming from a place of wisdom and compassion and love, awareness. Well, then that's what's leading. That's what's pulling. That's what we're trying to grow. That's what we're trying to strengthen here. So we're not trying to stop anything. You know, sometimes we can get the sense that we're trying to have certain kinds of, you know, even though I'm not really saying it, you can still think, oh, but we really are trying to, you know, make the mind more quiet and more still and, you know, not have so much going on. You know, there's such a strong kind of assumption that that's what meditation is about. But it isn't. It's really about this gaining more understanding, gaining more knowledge about our experience so that we can bring more wisdom and intelligence. And through that, perhaps start to live life more fully, more wholly, more completely. In some ways, we might say we're growing into being human. You know, human. We're really becoming more human. Living our capacity as human beings. We think and we feel and we are moved and touched and engaged and you know, our heart is open, our bodies are open, our minds are open, and we're more alive, more engaged with this world, with this life. Finding the ways that we might, that which might close us off or shut us down or disconnect us so we can begin to relax and open and let go, feel more, not to shut anything down. When I was last week, I went to Christchurch. I was there last year too, after the earthquake, a year after the earthquake, and it's pretty. Last year it was quite emotional. Very, very emotional to be there and see what had happened to the communities and the people, hearing the stories and all of that. And then I went back this year, and it was wonderful being back there and seeing some of the rebuilding that's happening, the changes that are happening there. Of course, still so much pain and sorrow and suffering for people there, hearing more stories. And my friend Adele and Russell took me on a little journey through the red zone, the residential red zone, and looking at the communities now after 2 years are just like ghost towns, you know, where there were very wonderful old communities, old houses, and now just windows boarded up, graffiti, all the weeds and the grasses, and all the roads are crumbling, and, you know, really just no life. No life except the earth, the elements coming back, taking over. It was very, very impactful, very emotional to see what happens. And it's not that, you know, that I reflect that it's not that I'm not supposed to feel. You know, there's some way that, you know, that to be awake or to be free or be liberated, I would just be so equanimous, you know, that I wouldn't actually feel anything. You know, I don't think that's what this is about. No, but actually feeling more. Feeling, really allowing myself to be touched, to feel the sadness, to feel the grief, to feel the pain, and allow myself to actually feel the humanity and my connection and my interconnectedness with all of humanity. It could be me. This could have happened to me. It could have happened to any one of us, to lose everything like that. So the experience becomes very personal in that respect. It's not even that we're trying to get to some kind of impersonal experience, which sometimes Buddhism, it can seem like this has something to do with the impersonal. But for me, all of this becomes even more personal. Because I am so impacted, I feel so much, I'm so touched by all of this. And it's very personal to me. And what's happening for me, which might be different than what's happening for somebody else in that experience. So it's both personal, but maybe the impersonal part is that it's universal. That if we all open to the truth of what's happening, that we all feel a certain kind of sorrow, we feel a certain kind of grief, we feel a certain kind of loss together. We join in that together. So maybe both. Maybe it's very personal, but it's also impersonal in the sense that we share all of this together. So not trying to get to one place or another, or make it one way or another, or trying to obliterate the sense of self so that we have more of a sense of selflessness, which then is just more confusion about what selflessness is, which has nothing to do with obliterating the self. So we're just opening and feeling and sensing what's here, what's happening, what's going on, and opening to that. We saw they have an exhibition downtown, the earthquake exhibition. Last year they had one, and then this year it was even more expanded with videos and different objects from the earthquake that have been recovered and stories and, you know, lots of information, graphs and data. And this year they had a video playing in a little theater, and on the video were humans who were in the earthquake telling their stories, just sitting in a seat with the camera on their face, telling their story. And the stories were about their loved ones and their experiences of what happened when the earthquake hit and how they related to their loved ones, where they were, how they were, their whole feeling about that, their joining with them, their fear of what would happen, and incredibly emotional tears and crying, and the heart just bursts open. I mean, I feel it right now as I'm speaking, you know, just how touching that is. You know, just one after the next, about 5 minutes each. Just so beautiful, and sitting there, I could just feel part of being part of the human race, the human, feeling my humanity and finding my place, my sense of belonging in this world as part of the flow of humanity. Not trying to interrupt that or stop that or become more equanimous, but because I have the more capacity to be in my body and to ground the body and to feel myself in the present moment and to breathe. The breath is such a valuable resource as we open, as we allow ourselves to engage, we need to know how to breathe. Because what happens if breath goes right up into the throat and then somehow not breathing is our protection. I remember one time when my niece, she was, 10 years old or something, and we were going to go on this roller coaster or something, and she said, as you get to the top, just stop breathing. Then you won't have to feel anything. and it's a little bit like that, right? If we stop breathing, we won't have to feel anything. Or something, it's the freeze response, and the flight response, just run away, go away, it's very much in the reptilian brain. Just shut it all down, right? So we remember that. So we're trying to raise our consciousness from being the animal, the mammal, we're trying to raise our consciousness. What's possible for us as human beings? Is it possible to stay open, to breathe, to feel our feet on the ground, to start to walk into some of those edges of our fear, the places where it feels scary or things feel so too uncertain or unknowing, just walking in a little bit more and breathing and feeling our feet on the ground. Invaluable resources for us. So today, this invitation to feel, to find out what is your relationship to that? What happens for you? What happens for you when you're touched by something, whether it's a memory of something that happened? What are you feeling about that? And can you allow that feeling to flow? And sometimes we're worried that we'll get overwhelmed if we walk into it. But then if we're able to ground, keep our feet on the ground, have some sense of the present moment, we'll be less overwhelmed, we'll be less taken over by it. So we start to explore a little bit. But what is our relationship to all of that? Is there things that we are wanting to keep compartmentalized, keep away, shut off, shut down? Allow ourselves to feel the grief. We all have so much grief, really. Because we all went through childhood. We all had parents, we all had families, we all had experiences. There's a lot of grief from that. And if you don't, you're really fortunate. You're really fortunate. It's such a rare thing not to have a lot of loss, a lot of pain, a lot of conflict, a lot of sorrow from our past. And those events come and go, but our body remembers. Our body remembers. All of that gets stored, those impressions get stored in the body. And as we meditate and get quiet and slow down, we start to feel some of what's in the body, and it comes up into consciousness through memory. And it comes up because it's time for us to look at that and reflect on that. It's okay. It's okay. So opening this up today. So we're not just caught in a lot of thinking, a lot of information, a lot of ideas, which are good. It's all good. It just, anything can get out of balance. Anything can be too much of something, too much of a good thing, maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm just getting the sense of this kind of the shower. Just let it shower down. That's... if the energy is caught up a lot, just let it come down. Down through the body, down into the earth, like the Dharma rain. You know, just let the rain come down. So let's open it up a little bit and just see what's happening for you as you hear these words, these teachings, comments, questions. Yes.
I so much appreciate what you just said. I mean, it was just beautiful.
Thank you.
Saying and also that engage with the body and using our mind intention to be in control. I didn't say the candle with the dog, I like it. Good example. And this is your mind gets pulled out to an object, to an experience. I think that's so true. And I find it gets also pulled out not only to the five senses, to thought, that also gets pulled out to relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because we often say the five senses are our modes of perception, but I feel it's good to consider the possibility that the relationship and also the world itself are modes of perception. And if we keep if we stay in one of those senses, let's say seeing, and I don't pick up relationships as a mode of perception or the world as a mode of perception, I create a hole in my awareness.
Yeah.
To make an example, I mean, you're probably all familiar with it. I checked out just the last days, how often is my mind going internally to relationship issues? And to really ground it in that moment, bring it back to the senses, and or to say, okay, the relationship itself, or the world itself, you brought also this beautiful example with Christchurch, itself creates edges, and we sort of like, we play inside, how could I have reacted differently? Or how could I respond to this and this interaction in a way that it would be useful? And sometimes it's very hard to just stay with that and stay with thought. So I personally find it very beneficial to them, as you also said, to ground it and find other modes how we can bring it into different modes of perceptions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like for example, but actually we help you out to Lizzie, for example, she does this fantastic explorative dance, bring it down to dance.
Yeah.
Or Mani, she does a universal dance where it's more ritualized, so I find it really helpful. Otherwise it stays so clocked in into this relating, and then we have these inner voices who actually add to this what we have been just experiencing in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, you're bringing it out more into the relational field,
yeah.
You know, both in a personal relationship, but also the more of social, worldly relationship, mm-hmm. And including that as well, which is, you know, for us, I think for the monastics as well, but for everyone, yes, I think it's so important to bring in that aspect of our experience as well. Yeah, and then the question of how to do that wisely,
how to do wisely,
you know, which is the whole development. It's a whole developmental skill in how to engage wisely with relationship. And in this tradition, we haven't done that very much. This tradition has been really much more about coming into the bare attention, so that we know more and more of our moment-to-moment experience through the five senses and the thought and the awareness of that. So we begin to deconstruct experience in that way. So more and more we know this quality of presence and present awareness. So we haven't focused so much on that in this tradition. There are other traditions that do that more. But I think that is also a piece I'm bringing out a little bit today as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, more of the relational. Mm-hmm. Very important. Thank you. Yeah.
I appreciate what you said today as well. I've had quite a lot of feelings coming up, and one thing that I've found with Tejaniya's, I said his name right, teaching, is that I was getting stuck in my thoughts and observing and observing my feelings and wanting to stay present. And that was sort of, I was getting a bit stuck with
it.
So what you've said today is sort of helping a lot.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, so you have more sense of then how to bring your attention down into your body.
Yeah.
Yeah, and making that a conscious intention. Yeah, really use that today. Try that more and more in the sitting with the breath and in the walking with your feet and your legs as you're moving. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be a really helpful thing. And then see what opens up for you there. Good.
Yeah, I'm not one of the lucky ones, so lots of triggers around everywhere that bring old stories in a repetitive manner. And I found it useful to ask myself, what is new? Which leads to the whole
picture. That's a great question.
It's an extra information that kind of brings the old story into a more realistic perspective. It's kind of acknowledging the dog sniffing at something, not just pulling it back, but coming to know.
And that would really be a way of expanding your consciousness, right? Because you're really looking in a new way, right? You're not just looking in the same old way and at the same old thing. So there's a kind of way you're expanding there and inviting that expansion. That's beautiful. Yeah, inviting the expansion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good. I think there's going to be a lot of people doing that one today.
I find I enjoy coming back to the breathing, when I come back to the breathing, it's like automatically I see how many thoughts there have been before, and it's like a relief, you see?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, so actually grounding back through your breath allows you to actually know more of what's happening in your experience. Well, you can reflect on that. So that's interesting as well. So rather than coming back to the breath and having it narrow your attention, it actually opens you in a way that you can then understand a little more about what was happening. Yeah, gives you that. I think there's a kind of a pause and a stopping in that. You're stopping the pattern, and so then you can see it. That's good. Thank you.
And the other thing is, for instance, when I wake up in the morning and I watch my breathing, I notice when I'm a Vesta, the breathing is predominantly one or the other nostril. Mm-hmm. But when I get up, it's both nostrils. Mm-hmm. And during the day, like if I sit, it's always one or the other, but I haven't found out when or why it's one or the other. But always when I'm in motion, and then it's both. And also it changes during the day. Sometimes it's only the right one, or only the left one all day. And then it changes. And, I don't know, it's just fun to watch, but I haven't found
Interesting. More things to be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you.
Particularly the transition from one to the other.
And I have watched it. It always takes only a few seconds. And then there's a change.
Mm-hmm. It might be interesting. It's just very brand new research, neuroscience research, that the right hemisphere has an impact on the left breathing nostril, left hemisphere on the right breathing nostril.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, if anybody wants to study this, or the emissary, the master and the emissary, very interesting.
Yes, I mean, there are just worlds upon worlds upon worlds of things we can get interested in.
Just really appreciated your teaching around, you know, the dog on the leash, and because I think I've had a really strong tendency to, just because I become aware of something, think that I have to stay with that, and that somehow it's a missed opportunity, even though, so if some, you know, difficult situation comes to mind, from the past, and so then it's an opportunity to let myself feel it all over again, so on, and there's something just so, I just never thought of awareness not necessarily being wise. I just didn't ever get that piece, and so for me that's so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
The possibility to know that there can be a wisdom operating that says, don't go there, you know.
Yeah.
Just let that go. And
yeah.
So that's really, for me, a very beautiful possibility.
Yeah, that's really good, Donna, because, you know, that's a good distinction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think better than using the word awareness, I like to use the word consciousness. Like consciousness,
mm-hmm.
consciousness's function is just to know. It doesn't in itself have wisdom. That's, you know, consciousness is simply just knowing what's occurring. But then there's something moving through consciousness. All those patterns are moving through consciousness. And so if you're just if you're not engaging, all those patterns are just going to be pulling you all around, right? Because there's no wisdom there. So we're attempting to bring the wisdom through as well. So that's moving around, not just the patterns, not just the ego, not just the conditioning. So really it is about the wisdom coming through. Yeah. That's good. It's good. So then, yeah, it just redirects your attention. Jen.
Mm-hmm. I've been aware of walking meditation, so I think in some ways connected to what you were talking about this morning, Shara, that a sense of kind of restlessness or boredom kind of something happening, and I think, you know, how can I be bored? This, you know, it's such a beautiful environment to be in, but decided to just kind of to notice and see what sort of came out of just of doing the walking meditation, because it was also tempting to predominantly do the sitting meditation. And so I thought, okay, maybe I'll go somewhere else and try somewhere else to walk a change. But for some reason, I'm not quite sure why, but when I was walking yesterday, this noticing the restlessness and kind of letting it go and observing what's happening, this realisation that I was focusing on my feet and not the rest of my body, that I spent a lot of time sort of just feeling my heels in contact, and that by shifting the attention to the sense of my whole body moving, just kind of seem to free things up, and I could be more aware of my breathing.
That's a really good example. Yeah, that's because you're the mind is getting fixated. You see that there was a way that the mind was tethered in a way to that pattern of being with your feet. But more, there was energy. You're feeling that as restlessness. You're feeling it. So the energy wanted to move. The attention wanted to move off of your feet. But by continuing to bring it back to your feet, there was a tension. There's a tension, right? And so finally you just let it go. You brought the awareness more into your whole body and something freed up. See? That's a really good example. And then you can even free it up even more, just so then maybe start to see, start to feel. I'm going to give a little practice about that today. So just even opening it more and then see what comes in. That's great that you saw that. Usually that when there's the restlessness or even boredom, it means something's out of alignment. There's some way that we're in the force field of the pattern. Mm-hmm. And so then that opening up, seeing what else is going on.
I think through having that permission to be curious about it, is this a helpful trait?
Great. Yes, right, good. Yeah.
I'm just noticing here now how I think from what you offered us, people are accessing the wisdom. It just feels like it's there. And I think you said.
Yeah, it's a wisdom field. Yeah. It's just so beautiful about this kind of environment. It just opens up. I feel that a lot when I'm here. So I don't want to leave.
Neither do we.
Good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just wanted to say that was, I was really affirming of what I feel like I've come to the last day or so as well, what you're talking about. And I had an example this morning of, you know, being caught up and in my thoughts. And then what I noticed was just in my body, it was when I came to sit down, I noticed just that kind of agitation. Mm-hmm. And it was a kind of felt sense. And just noticing it was, in that case, it was enough. I mean, in some other circumstances, I have allowed myself to inquire, and I found that really valuable as well, you know, that you brought this, like, what am I aware of? And then sometimes, like, if it was aversion, the next question would be, why? Why am I feeling this? And that's without, I haven't, yeah, that's been really helpful just to kind of take that next step as well. I just clarify things and things have shifted.
Yeah. You're giving yourself more options.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. More to play with there.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah, good. That's great. Mm. Thank you. Yeah.
I noticed a similar sense of restlessness this morning as well, and I tried to just be with it and notice it and be aware of it, and then I thought, well, I'll just explore it more, and so I just started moving. I walked around in a restless, kind of aimless state, and so it just developed into actually really interesting rhythmic movement. So it was like the restlessness was something so condensed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't perceive it totally, so I expanded it out with the movement, and it became something really interesting.
Yes.
So I was back into being aware, got out of the restlessness through going into.
Yeah, that's beautiful, because you also have in your being you're a dancer, right? And you move, and that's something that, you know, is natural for you. And so you want to allow that. You know? I mean, it's also something in the form of sitting and walking and sitting and walking, you know, that probably would be investigated in a different way. But here, you know, you can just let it expand and free up. It frees up in that way. It's great you saw that. Because it's really the question, well, why stay contained? Why? Why not move? You have that option too. You know, all these different edges of freedom. So maybe just one more.
I noticed that I was very attached to my bed at home this morning and very attached to a good night's sleep. So I had a restless night. But, yeah, it's fine. I can embrace that and accept that my bed is really good.
Yeah.
Avoid the fact.
Right, so you're not really in that much conflict, it doesn't sound
like.
No. Right, so there may be attachment, but it's not like causing you a lot of pain. And that's really what we're interested in, you know. Is there something really hooking or not? But it doesn't seem like. Yeah. Good, thank you. So I would like us to do a little practice.